Hello, everyone. After about a month-long hiatus, welcome back to the Rebel Room, Ryan Green and Rob Misch. It's been a little while, partner.
Been a little while, yeah. We're getting ready to do a deep freeze, a little hibernation, but we got to keep feeding the monster.
I would say the last time we probably talked to all the folks out there was in Lexington, Kentucky.
Beautiful Lexington, Kentucky.
Yes.
Yeah, what a...
We know how you felt about Lexington, Kentucky. It wasn't the worst place in the world.
No, it wasn't. It was a good capper to a certain type of season we've been talking about all season.
Yeah.
Certain B word. Mm-hmm. It was, yeah.
It was an oddball, basically.
To have to go to Lexington on such a quick turnaround, that really wasn't too fair for any program, much less UNLV. So, yeah.
There's been a lot happen over the last month in UNLV hoops, and we're going to cover all of it here in about the next 15, 20 minutes. And let's start with some news that just came the other day. Glenn Gondo Gondrzik passing at the age of 53, following apparent complications from a heart transplant that he had back in September. And this one is really this has hit the UNLV family pretty hard, as expected.
Yeah, I just got back from the memorial at the Thomas and Mack Center, and it was pretty heartfelt. It was 90 minutes. A lot of people had a lot to say. Robert Smith, in particular, was pretty choked up. It was a really difficult event for him. He had some fantastic memories playing with Gondo on that first Final Four team in 1977, and he struggled to get through his talk. And his was the most poignant. It was really touching.
About how many people showed up for that to pay their respects?
It seemed like there was a few hundred. It was at one end of the Mac, and it was sort of the other end was had the black curtains up, and a good stage area. There was maybe seating for 100 on the floor, and then most everybody else was up in the stands in that over
bowl.
At the other end of the bowl, right? All the UNLV players were there up at one end. And Barb Kruger was there. Kevin Kruger was there with his girlfriend. A lot of old Rebels. Reggie Theus was there. Jerry Tarkanian was a no-show, so he can get busy, and it can be difficult for him to get out of Fresno. He spends a lot of time in Fresno. But it was somber, but it was also uplifting. There was a lot of great stories told. There was a lot of laughter. Mm. He was quite the prankster, and some of those stories got out. One time... Reggie Theus and Gondo wrapped up Robert Smith in tape. He was always kind of being a leader. He was always the guy who was charged with getting the players together. Okay, you got 10 minutes to get down to the bus. Make sure the players are down there. They were at a hotel in Utah once under that situation. 10 minutes to go. Okay, Robert was going room to room, and Gondo and Reggie Theus didn't want to be bothered. They were hunkered under their beds and under their comforters, and so Robert rousted them. They went down there, but they said, we're going to get you. So they got back to the hotel. They wound up kind of cornering him in their hotel room, and they wound up tying his hands together with tape and his feet together, his hands to his feet, and they put a sock in his mouth, and they put tape around the sock, and they threw him in the elevator and hit the ground floor. So the elevator goes down to the ground floor, it opens up, and Robert said all he heard was women shrieking. So, yeah, there was a lot of hijinks when Gondo was around.
There's a lot of stories like that we've heard over the
time
that we've known him. Yeah.
We were also victims of some of his minor pranks in the airports. There was always a little time to kill, and I'm not exactly sure what button he had on his iPhone.
He had an application on there that would make flatulating noises.
He got a kick out of walking by people in the airport, and then unbeknownst to them, he's got his hand in his pocket, and he just kind of coyly hits that button.
Yeah.
And the sound comes out, and people always had to shoot him a look of amazement.
Well, that's it was always the room always brightened when he was walking in before games when he'd come hang out, And, yeah, he's obviously going to be missed by a lot of people.
Absolutely, yeah. Fun-loving guy, enjoyed life, hustled every second as a Rebel, as a player, and he brought that to the broadcast booth. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of years when I think they said there was a 12-year stretch. They went through 8 coaches. Well, Gondo was working the radio for all that stretch, and someone asked him once, you know, how do you do it? How do you get through such lulls and such a dearth? And it was his love for the university, his love for the program that just kept him going and hoping for better things right around the corner. So he's going to be missed by a lot of people.
Well, that that hope for better things around the corner is shared by everyone in Rebel Nation these days. As one season is in the books, there's another one to look forward to. So let's shift gears and talk about that a little bit. A lot has happened since the end of the 08-09 season.
There's no such thing as an off season almost.
No, there really isn't.
It's constant,
not at this point.
And you know, at this point, nothing should surprise people.
Well, and especially when they've kind of made a habit over the last few years of, you know, you wrote about it yesterday. A lot of transfers going out, a lot of transfers coming in. A very fluid roster Lon Cougars had over the last few years, and this summer appears to be no different so far.
You know, before they went to Australia, I asked them, "Where is the program as far as?" Stability is concerned, as far as does he want it to be to get more high school based, does he want to just you know, just, and that would create more continuity, more stability. What if you did nothing but recruit high schoolers and didn't have to rely on transfers? Well, then obviously you got people who are going to be around 3-4 years, and that's going to come with some stability. But at that point, you know, obviously he's had his share of transfers every year, and he said he was fine with the way it was going. This is what he had envisioned. So I don't think he would have envisioned
as many
6 players in 18 months departing. But you know what? As a program grows and matures and wants and strives to get to that elite level, this is what happens.
Yeah.
I mean, better players come in annually, and unfortunately, you have people who are going to be tossed by the wayside.
Well, and let's be real about it too. You know, in this age of recruiting especially, you know, you got to make some noise in the NCAA tournament to basically put yourself on that map as far as landing the top high school talent.
Right.
And, you know, their run a couple of years ago, very nice, got them to the Sweet 16. But, I mean, we're talking you need to make a run pretty deep. And you got to do it consistently. You got to be in the NCAA tournament consistently, which, you know, they did the last 2 years. This year they stepped back a little bit. But, you know, in the meantime, before you're able to land this top high school talent, you know, I really don't see what's wrong with what they've done so far as bringing in guys from, you know, it's one thing to be bringing in transfers,
right,
but it's another thing to be bringing them in from UCLA, where Chase Stanback was on a Final Four team, you know, Memphis, where Trevon Willis was on a team that went to the Elite Eight, Kentucky, where Derek Jasper played in the NCAA tournament 2 years in a row, and so on and so on.
And
so
possibly even Kansas this week,
exactly,
with Quintrell Thomas, who you spoke with a few days ago.
And we'll get into that in a second. But, yeah, I mean, at least you're taking a top tier kind of transfer.
Exactly. You know, there's a big case to be made for that, because you know, not so long ago this program just needed warm bodies.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? Now you need to produce, and it's not just a matter of you know, I think Deshaun would be the first to tell you that Deshaun Mitchell, who left Sunday, got his release. He played 21 games last season, very sparingly, maybe 5 minutes a game on average. He had a great debut with 14 points against Texas Pan Am, and then it just didn't pan out. We've detailed enough about his defensive deficiencies.
Mm-hmm.
He's a wonderfully gifted athletic player.
Mm-hmm.
He's an electric dunker, and he's got a good knack, too, for making up for some of his defensive deficiencies.
With his athleticism.
With that athleticism,
yeah.
With some spectacular blocks.
Block shots
seen
from behind, things like that.
But we also saw, very late in the season, we saw him getting very sternly coached for those defensive deficiencies in practice. So, you know, He needs some work. He's got a ways to go. And however it happened with his departure here, granted, maybe it wasn't the best situation or the best scene.
Yeah.
It's big time basketball, and that's the way it goes at all of the elite programs.
It's not. They're not here to coddle you if you can't cut it.
And
sorry.
If people don't like reading or hearing that, you know, Deshaun wanted to stay. He wanted to work. He wanted to improve. He wanted to earn playing time. If people are going to hear and read that and then and then also in the same sentence hear that he had no options here,
yeah.
Like say Lon Kruger told him the best thing to do would be to move on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm back to the point where it's Darwinism and big time basketball can be harsh.
Exactly, because you look at it, where was he really going to fit in that rotation next year? It was a true uphill climb. Even if he did, you know, take a lot of the steps that he needed to, what was going to be deemed as enough,
right,
to jump him ahead of a guy like, say, Kendall Wallace or an incomer like Anthony Marshall, who's
right.
You know, who, let's be honest, was more polished as a high school senior than Deshaun was as a college freshman.
Absolutely.
So guys
absolutely.
Like that.
Absolutely. He was really a big time tweener. You know, they called him a forward, but let's face it, he was a swingman at
mm-hmm.
best.
Yep.
To make a living, to earn a scholarship, he needs to hit shots, not just a dunk every third game. And his shot had a lot of work to do.
Mm.
And he wasn't about to be a banger inside with 6'8", 6'9" guys.
No, no.
So, I mean, it was an odd fit and a tough fit. And you know what? When a guy comes into a program, both sides don't exactly know what they're getting until
mm-hmm.
he's there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a feeling out process. And guess what? Things are constantly changing. That is the one constant in life. Things change.
Yep.
So, you know, those who can adapt to those changes are the ones who are going to survive and fare the best.
Well, and the changes are going to keep coming because UNLV has two open scholarships for next season. You know, when they had one, there was kind of maybe a 50-50 feeling that, you know, maybe they'll fill it, maybe they'll find somebody over the summer, maybe
right.
there'll be a transfer, maybe they just roll it over to 2010 and
mm-hmm.
give themselves two
mm-hmm.
open for 2010. Now they have two for 2009-2010 season. And I don't know if a coaching staff really wants to go into a season with two open scholarships. So they're obviously pursuing some guys, and one of them will be in town this weekend. You mentioned earlier Quintrell Thomas from Kansas. Another guy, you know, his situation at Kansas, very familiar or very similar to the situation Chase Stanback faced at UCLA. Guy who came in, you know, wasn't terribly highly regarded, had some talent, could do it. But, you know, he didn't develop right away, and he got recruited over, basically.
It was a tough fit and maybe not the best system for him?
No, not really.
Uh-huh.
I mean, he's a guy who, you know, is listed at 6'8", from what I've heard from people back in Lawrence, maybe a little closer to 6'6.5", 6'7". But still, you know, he came in. After he committed to Kansas, they get the Morris twins out of Philadelphia, who had been committed to Memphis. Then they get Jeff Withey to transfer in from Arizona. You get Thomas Robinson, a top 20 recruit out of the Northeast, and Cole Aldrich, who could have been a lottery pick this year, decides to come back to school. The writing's on the wall.
Yeah.
It's just not going to happen. So he goes looking at other options, and UNLV appears to be one of them, as he will be in town visiting this weekend. He visited St. Joe's last weekend in Philadelphia, and he is visiting Siena next week.
And you spoke with him just a couple days ago. What were the
yeah.
highlights of that talk?
Yeah, you know, he obviously looked at UNLV pretty hard and close when he was coming
right.
out of high school. It was one of his final three choices, I believe it was. But, you know, he said it's a very real option. He likes their system very much. And, you know, he was talking about that, and I think some people got riled up by one of his quotes where he said he basically doesn't want to be a guy who's tethered
right.
to the post. I wouldn't read too far into that. This is a guy who has, you know, we were talking about him, and I talked about how I felt he'd be a nice fit in the Mountain West, and a guy I compared him to was Tyson Johnson at Wyoming, who, you know, had a successful couple years
right.
there after transferring in from junior college.
Exactly.
Guy who could average about 16 points, 8 rebounds, not elite height, but a thick, strong, thick body, can bang around and get it done, and has range out to about 14, 15 feet. Very, very similar player.
People might have misconstrued the one statement. What did they take out of context, or what was maybe...
Well, that he basically said he wanted to expand his game beyond the post, and, you know, he didn't want to just be tethered to the post,
right.
which is understandable because he is, you know, 6'7", but...
Who doesn't
want to
be versatile and add other skills?
Yeah, and the fans, though, I think that saw that and reacted were maybe thinking this is a guy who wants to sit out on the three-point arc and just, you know, play three-point line to three-point line basketball,
yeah.
not rebound, but
yeah.
I don't think that's the case. And I don't think Lon Kruger and his staff would take him if that was the case.
Right.
But, you know, back to the original point about transfers from these big-time programs, look at what you're getting. You're getting guys, for example, this is a guy who practiced with a team all year that went to a Sweet 16.
Right.
Chase Stanback practiced all year with a Final Four team that had Kevin Love. Derek Jasper practiced and played on two NCAA tournament teams. Trevon Willis played on an Elite Eight team.
These guys
had
know.
Guys that he played with guys who were playing in the national championship
exactly.
game a year later.
Exactly.
They know the game.
They know the demands that are required of to be an elite team.
Yes.
And that is nothing
yes.
but a positive.
Exactly. And I don't think that can be undersold very much.
Right. Did Quintrell at all talk about any connection with UNLV? Did he play ball with anybody?
See,
here?
I don't
Did
know
he...
what the connection is, and, yeah. and I only had a couple minutes with him on the phone. Yeah. He had to go to class, but yeah, I don't know what the connection. I think they were recruiting him pretty long and hard for mm-hmm. a while he was in high school, and Kansas, you know, kind of swooped in late on him. Kansas was in a situation last year where their recruiting class, they had about 6 or 7 scholarships to give, and nobody was committing.
Yeah.
And they started maybe reaching a little bit on guys. And he was, I don't want to, you know, he was maybe one of those guys they reached with a little bit. And then late in the game, the Morris twins come into play.
Right.
So, you know, he kind of it was just bad timing almost.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I think the fact that UNLV lost 6 guys within 18 months, I think it looks worse, much worse than it is.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you could never, ever plan on Emmanuel Adefe coming in here and his very first game as a Rebel complaining and moaning, to put it mildly, about the lack of minutes he got in that very first game during that game.
Yeah,
you couldn't.
Yeah.
How do you know how a kid is ticking? What makes him, you know, what's mm-hmm. clicking between his ears? And then for him to
exactly
to so brazenly face down with Kruger in the post game chat in the locker room afterward, you're just begging for a one way ticket out of town.
Exactly,
and
exactly.
You know, and as far as a guy like Marcus Lawrence, how many chances can you give a kid? And you know, as I pointed out in my article, he's got into more legal trouble in Moscow, Idaho, and he's currently on the indefinitely suspended list. So, you know,
nothing's guaranteed with these kids.
I mean, you get a chance, you get a second chance, you get a third chance, and sometimes, you know, you're given too many chances.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, granted, I do think it looks worse than it is, and it is inordinate, but it's the way the chips fell.
Yeah. Well, let's Quintrell obviously is one guy they're pursuing. Let's talk a little bit about a couple of just the way things are shaping up for next season. I know first and foremost you had a talk a couple weeks ago with Trevon Willis.
Yeah.
Had a chance to maybe let him you know, he had a chance to let the dust settle after what was a to say the least an up and down season, but what kind of came out of that?
As we all know, as the world knows, that guy hates losing, and that's pretty commendable. He really takes it hard, and heck, there were some games where he didn't play well, and they won, and he didn't want to talk after games, and so he takes it all quite personal. And so, you know, we gave him a few weeks and then chatted with him, and he is really looking forward to next season. Foremost on his mind is he has an uncle who's recovering from some illness. During spring break, Trevon had to bolt home, and he thought his uncle was on his deathbed. And while he wasn't doing well, he recovered nicely. He's now recuperating at home. So Trevon wants nothing more than to be able to play a game at the MAC with his uncle in the mm-hmm. barn next mm-hmm. year. He is really looking forward. He was really high on Deshaun when we talked just 2 weeks ago. Said he'd been looking really good in pickup ball. Just looking forward to the new combinations that are going to be on the floor with Derek Jasper running the point, with Chase Stanback likely the 3.
A lot of versatility.
So you're looking at Trey at number 2. That's some pretty good height and some pretty good danger for mm-hmm. some foes. So and they're going to be bigger next year with Carlos Lopez in. Matt Shaw will be healthy. You got to imagine Santee and Masamba will be improved after their indoctrination to elite D1 ball.
Yeah.
And if they're not careful, Carlos Lopez, I think, could be snaking some minutes, some hefty minutes, if not the starting role down low.
And you got a good look at Carlos down the stretch run. And, you know, we talk about players coming from elite college programs into UNLV. What about elite high school programs? And Finley Prep, down the street in Henderson, you know, appeared to be as elite as anyone this year.
Sure.
And Carlos Lopez had a big role in that, and you went out to Bethesda with him. And, give us some insight on what you saw out of him there and everything.
He really elevated his play with that stage and with that competition. I think some fans saw on each of those games were on ESPN, so mm-hmm. people got a good look at him. And
yeah.
He's got some great twist moves down low, as we have documented. He just has a great feel for his teammates, and it was really interesting to see him on that heightened stage, and he responded. He and Tristan Thompson were a heck of a low post duo, and
so he's not scared away by it.
He's not. He needs to put on some pounds, like any UNLV fan who has seen him this past season knows. But you know what he does do that these two, that Masamba and Santee, do not do, is he will take the ball to the rim without hesitation. It's as if that's his first MO, whereas it's not really on the radar with those other two guys. He will take it. He's got a ferocious inside game, and so I think UNLV fans are going to be really pleased to see that. They were just dominant, Ryan. They were dominant throughout the whole season. Of course, they went 33-0, but I'll tell you what, in that three-game tournament, they played 4 8-minute quarters. So Finley wound up playing 96 minutes a ball,
uh-huh.
and they only trailed for 4.5 total minutes in that entire tournament. And most of that, just a little over 3 minutes, was in the second quarter against Oak Hill. So, you know, the final was very interesting, the new school against the old school. You know, Oak Hill is established,
yeah.
7 mythical titles.
Yeah.
Finley's been around 3 years. Mike Peck has a record of 65-1 at Finley. This was new against old. And I tell you what, Steve Smith, the coach of Oak Hill, was not used to trailing by double digits. He said the last time that happened was 2002 against LeBron James. So we figured this was happening. We figured that was a little jewel up in the Henderson foothills,
yeah,
and that just established them as, you know what, that's the elite team in the country, and people can really do themselves a favor by watching them play.
Definitely. Well, before we get out of here until next week, when we will be back to talk, we're gonna try to update you fans out there with the Rebel Room as often as possible here,
sure.
during the off season, especially because as we've seen, there is no off season.
A lot of off season news, but one real question for you, Ryan. I know we just had the end of a long spring football practice. I know the expectations are probably heightened a bit with mm-hmm. the pigskin. Mm-hmm. What were some of the maybe one or two highlights of spring ball?
Well, you know, they obviously address the needs in terms of the secondary. There's a lot of guys still to come over the summer. As far as they have, I believe, 6 newcomers still coming in at the defensive back spots. But, you know, a few guys were here already from the JUCO ranks, and Warren Ziegler's a name to remember. Quentin Pointer missed all of spring ball recovering from shoulder surgery, but Warren Ziegler's a speedster. He's a playmaker. And, boy, he bodied up with 6'4" Philip Payne without hesitation. And that's a kid whose name you're going to want to remember.
He's a cornerback?
Yeah, cornerback.
From where?
He is from California.
Okay.
And at the running back spot, you know, Mike Sanford, I think, wanted to see somebody separate themselves here in the spring, and nobody really did. It's very cloudy, and all it's done is really heighten the expectation for Bradley Randall coming in, who's probably the most highly touted of this 09 recruiting class. He will be here in July, and I'm not going to say the job's his to lose, but he's going to have as good a chance to win the starting job as anybody else. And, boy, I saw him walking around at the spring game, too. He was there watching. Big, big kid. Doesn't look like he's 18. So, you know, he's only about 5'10", 5'9", 5'10", but he is built and very fast, shifty. It's going to be fun to watch him play. And you know what? They're going into spring ball or going into the summer without a quarterback controversy either. They've got two guys who could start for just about anybody in the Mountain West, and very few teams in major conferences can claim that.
We would be remiss in not talking about Frank Summers.
Getting drafted by the Steelers. Couldn't be a better fit.
First running really. Back in 21 years?
In 20 years. Could not be a better fit. First since Icky Woods.
Yeah.
And, boy, I mean, the writing was on the wall from early March that when, you know, the Steelers sent three guys out here, including the running backs coach, to Pro Day. You know, he ran a 4.55, 34.5-inch vertical, put up 30 reps on the bench, caught every pass they threw to him. They ran some drills. Then they bring him out there for a visit.
They flew him to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, they flew him to Pittsburgh. And then I'll tell you, during the draft, that fifth round, they had 168 and 169 back-to-back. They took the full 3 minutes to make the 168 pick. and then took about 10 seconds to make the 169 pick, and I was sitting there watching thinking, this very well could be him.
Yep.
Boom.
Good for him.
So very good fit for him, and I've been reading what Mike Tomlin had to say about him. It sounds like he's going to have a good chance to not only make the team but play pretty early.
That's a good boost for the UNLV football program.
Can do nothing but help, yep. Especially because he was a JUCO transfer, and they take a lot of them right now. They're taking a lot of them. So, yep. Any final comments on your end?
Wow. The season is finally over.
Sort of.
Yeah. Well, you know what? As you said, we'll hopefully be reporting, doing some more of these with some sort of regularity. But fans can also look out for probably some work from us on all the spate of hoops tournaments that, yep, are going to be going on here this summer in July. We have Nike Adidas camps, Reebok. We have NBA Summer League. We even have the U.S. national team that's going to be back here for a week. There's going to be a lot of young bucks, so we'll be hot and heavy over all that.
Sounds great.
Yep.
Stay tuned all summer. Bring it to the pool with you. Put it on the iPod.
There you go.
I've never done it, but maybe I will.
I don't have an iPod.
I'll get you one.
Thanks.
Take care, guys. Bye-bye.